Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 29th day of May, Anno Domini 2021, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Before I start the news, I just want to remind you that it is indeed the 29th day of May, and that you only have a couple of days to download all your images from Google Photo if you want to back them up. But the important thing is that starting June 1st, the free storage goes away. So
anything you currently have
will stay.
Stays for free, but anything you add after that now
counts against your what you call it. Unless of course you're using a Pixel phone. And then it's still free. Okay.
Until they change that policy.
Here comes the news. If you get a letter from Infinity Insurance saying you or one of your family members has been exposed in a data breach, just throw it away. It's a scam. The letter offers a year of free identity theft protection, but they want you to go to a specific website and fill in all kinds of personal information in order to get it. If you give them the info, that will be the real data breach because it's an identity theft scam.
The message is correct,
yes. We know of this happening via the mail, but that doesn't mean it can't be a phone scam or an email scam, too. So spread the word to your friends, family, and neighbors, please. On March 16th, 2021, Infinity Insurance Company notified an unknown number of individuals of a data security incident that occurred on December 26, 2020. The company claimed that an unauthorized party accessed files on certain company servers in their network over 2 days in late December. The notice also included an offer for 1 year of credit monitoring services. Infinity has provided affected individuals with an information hotline. However, many people have taken to social media with complaints about the number failing to work reliably and frustrations about being unable to get useful information. Unfortunately, Infinity's formal notice failed to provide further details about the data breach, leaving many people confused with growing suspicions of potential fraud. Furthermore, many individuals who received the notice have never been a customer or employee of Infinity, leading them to question the validity of the situation. These dynamics have led to rampant online concerns of whether the Infinity data breach notices could be a phishing scam designed to expose personal details when called about the data breach and credit monitoring services offer. Infinity is a subsidiary of Kemper Insurance. At this time, there is reason to believe that all Kemper entities may have been involved in the data breach, including Alliance United. I did a lot of searching about this because we got the email. And I am not a customer of Infinity Insurance or any Kemper Insurance company. So I did a lot of searching. And the amount of reliable information out there is small, but there is a preponderance of alerts and notices from police departments that this is a scam. So I'm going with them. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is scam alert, Infinity Insurance. And your choices are, I got the letter and threw it away, I got the letter and called, I'll be on the lookout for the letter, snail mail, how quaint, and other. So far, we have 19 votes. We'd love to have a lot of votes on this one. Only one person, nobody said they got the letter and called, which is good. One person got the letter and threw it away. A lot of people said, I'll be on the lookout for the letter and just behind them, snail mail. How quaint. Of course, if you said other, we'd love you to head over to our website at soundbites.org. That is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff. The second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 29 May 21, Scam Alert, Infinity Insurance. And, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. It's interesting. My wife asked me, raised the point, why are they doing it snail mail? And I said, because they want to get the old people. They want to get the people who still pay attention to snail mail.
And it costs money to send postal mail.
Yeah.
So the scams, and it's illegal to send scams through postal mail. And so they're less likely.
Right. But yeah, I don't... I got one. It was very official. It had my full name. It had the proper address. The return address is Return Mail Processing with a post office box in a city that Infinity Insurance isn't in. But here's my favorite part. And I quote, "You'll need to supply your name, address, date of birth, social security number, and other personal information." That's not suspicious in the least.
No.
When they have half of that on the first part of the letter.
Right, exactly right. So that's right on the back page, and it caught my eye as I was just looking through it. And I laughed and laughed and laughed. And so I kept it only because I wanted to read that bit there today. So if you get a letter from Infinity Insurance, you may be assured that it's a scam. And if you are, in fact, a person who is a customer of Infinity Insurance or Kemper Insurance or one of the other subsidiaries, call them directly yourself. Do not use any of the numbers or websites in the letter, because if it is fake, then that's a fake thing and you shouldn't be using that one. So definitely.
Yeah, there's still that old-fashioned way of picking up the phone, dialing the number, your actual number that's on your contract.
Exactly.
Because I guarantee everybody's, whether it's auto insurance or home insurance or whatever, has a phone number that, or an agent.
On the card you've got an agent.
Yeah, call them. Ask them. Right. Hey, what's with this? Just, and he'd be, should be well aware of any scam or anything else, or whether they sent you out anything.
I did call, like I said, I am not a customer of any of the subsidiaries that I know about of Infinity Insurance, of Kemper Insurance, which is the parent company of Infinity. So I could not call my agent, but I did call a couple of people to ask if they were Infinity or Kemper or one of the other, which I can't remember right now, customers, and they were not. So I could not call an agent of the company and ask them. But definitely, like I said, half a dozen police departments across the country have notices that it is, in fact, spam. So I trust them. So that's the way we're playing the game today, is we're believing them. That's today's game. So be very careful. And in general, never, never believe anything you get in email or snail mail, or as a text message. I think we're all pretty well aware that all the your auto car warranty things, those are scams. I think we're all pretty well aware of that.
But what if I want to extend my car's warranty?
Then you call your agent, or you call your dealer, or your car dealer is what I meant in that case. But there's just... You got to be very, very, very careful. Oh, and before I... First, don't forget you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free, 1-800-790-0415. But before I forget, as you know, every Sunday night, we do the Soundbites Lounge, where we get together over video chat, talk about computers or whatever else comes up in our little heads. And so we'll be doing that tomorrow night. But for those of you who have bookmarked the URL, that has changed. The bookmark has changed. We are doing this through the courtesy of Mastermind Lounge at mastermindlounge.com. And they upgraded their system, and so the URLs, the internal URLs, have all changed. So if you go to the old site, you will be disappointed. You will get a 404 error. So go to soundbites.org/lounge, and you will get to the page that links you to the correct site, where you will be able to connect up to the system. And the reason we upgraded was because there were some issues with Safari. And so we upgraded to hopefully solve those issues. And so that should be working now. I've actually tested it with a MacBook Pro. And
On your Raspberry Pi 400?
No. Not yet. Have a Raspberry Pi 400. I'm waiting for the 8-gig version. Doggone it.
Speaking, since I happen to bring it up, sure. Raspberry Pi. For folks that are out there, and, you know, we've been touting about playing around with the Raspberry Pis and everything else. One thing that I discovered this weekend, well, actually two things. If you're trying to write your Raspberry Pi, Raspberry Pi came out with a new program, an imager program. And you can download that for free. It will format your little SSD drive. And then you can also write images. It'll go out and grab the current images and write them to your SSD card. And it is a great utility if you want to, you know, just wipe an SD card down to, you know, 32-bit. It'll handle it. You can go down the menu and select it and say erase it. It'll format it and do everything nice and easy for you. No going to... Before, you used to have to get like SD formatter and then Win32 disk imager and then, you know, play around those. Well, this, they put it all together in one little package. And I found out one other great little utility on it was before I was taking my Raspberry Pi 4s and booting them off the SD cards. Well, I did a little searching around because I have SSD hard drive on it. And I thought, they're saying that we can now, with the latest image for ARM, boot it right off the hard drive. Well, the question is, you know, the Raspberry Pis are always used to booting off the SSD. Well, if you take a blank SD card, mini card, put it into your USB port on your computer, down that menu on PC, the Pi Imager, there is a utility that you can then load onto the SD card, put it in your Pi and boot, and what it'll do is now make it so your Raspberry Pi, instead of booting off an SD card only, it will now boot off a USB port and an SSD hard drive, which is a lot faster than even the regular SD cards.
Now, to be clear, you still have to have the SD card in there to set it up.
Just to, no, once you...
To set it up, not to start it every time, but to set it up, right?
No. What you could do... Yeah, let me make this back up a little bit.
Okay.
All right, so I go ahead and I run this little utility, and literally all it does is you put it on the SD card, put it in your Raspberry Pi, and your screen will turn green, and you'll see the lights on the Raspberry Pi flash a couple times. Shut it off. Now I take my SSD hard drive, blank SSD hard drive, I hook it up to my computer. I burn an image using Raspberry Pi Imager to the SSD hard drive.
Oh, okay.
Now, once it's done, I unplug it, plug it into my Raspberry Pi, boot it up, boom. You give it a little while, and all of a sudden it loads up Windows ARM, 64-bit, and I'm running Windows 64-bit Pro.
Oh, see, this is the new one.
Yeah.
I used the old one.
Yeah.
And you still had to have the SSD card.
Yeah, now with this, there's a little utility that you go down and put it on that card, and it makes it now so I can boot right off, load an image right to an SSD hard drive.
If you have an older Raspberry Pi, you have to update the bootloader.
Yeah.
That's the trick. There you go.
Yeah, so I was playing around with that, and I wound up switching both my Raspberry Pi 4s over to booting just right off the SSD hard drive. I mean, the SD little micro cards are fast. Don't get me wrong. They're fast little things. But when you can just move it, boot it off to a hard drive and have all that room too, it's slick. Now I'm trying to find other programs and playing around. It does video really good. The sound port is now fixed on it.
Yep.
And the networking works great. You know, it finds it. Yeah, it's a lot of fun playing around with. And again, as we've said before, it's not a lot of money, you know, to play around with this. And it's just all it's going to take is time, you know, and playing around with. Oh, if you mess something up, well, wipe it out, start again. But that Raspberry Pi Imager program, I recommend to a lot of folks if they're using Raspberry Pis to do whatever.
Right, right.
Whether
I like that. I like that they've finally updated the bootloader itself.
Yeah.
That's nice.
And okay. They got, you know, again, off that menu, you can even, like I say, load just Raspbian.
Right.
Or there's a whole raft of different things that this little program that they put together, and it's free to users and play around with.
Right. Those of you looking for Raspbian will find that they've renamed it Raspberry Pi OS.
Mm-hmm.
But usually looking for Raspbian still finds you.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It'll still get you there.
Yeah. And you can download it for Windows or Mac OS, not to run on them, but to install from. Or if you've already got the Raspberry Pi, you can just, for that imager, you can just say sudo apt install rpi-imager. So.
And this is sort of like Unix. You know, there's such a great support team out there. I mean, they were, when we came out with, on two other Pis, the Raspberry Pi, a 0 and a 3, I use PiStar, which, again, is for my ham stuff. But, again, just setting it basically up to get to that screen out on your network. You know, folks were having trouble finding the web address and everything else, and it's like, oh, you know, what is this? So some other user in the community said, all right, I'll take care of that. And he wrote a little utility that when you're before you go and install PiStar onto it, you copy this file. You first go to their website and you say, okay, what's my network
address?
You know, and it'll say, what's the name and what's the password? You plug that in, it writes a little file, and they tell you, all right, now just copy that little file over to your boot image. Put it in, and you got to let it run because it's, you know, it's still a little slow. But once it loads the image, it also goes out and now automatically finds your network.
Right.
And it's like, cool. No more searching.
And in fact, you can also download the Raspberry Pi desktop.
Yep.
So if you have an old Intel-based Mac or an old PC that really isn't running anything new, you can
Twister will run pretty good on that too.
Yeah.
Twister is another good OS if folks want to play around with something, and it already comes preloaded with LibreOffice, so it's already got in there for you if you want to do your word processing and spreadsheets and presentations. Again, it's there, it's free, and again, not paying out the big bucks to Microsoft.
The Twister OS is, I believe, an ARM product. Not right. So you can't run Twister OS on your old PC, I don't think.
No.
Oh, they have Twister UI for PC, so I suppose you can run the front end. But yeah, so there's just lots of alternatives. And one thing that we're finding is a whole lot of people over this last year when they've been sitting at home bought Raspberry Pis and started playing with them. For $100, you get a whole desktop if you buy the Pi 4.
Yeah.
All you need to add is a screen. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they come everybody's with the HDMI. TV, right. Everybody's got a TV.
Two HDMI ports.
Right.
And as a matter of fact, this latest ARM release will support dual monitors.
Yeah.
Whereas before it was just one. Now it will support the two monitors.
Right. So they're having fun with them, doggone it.
I mean,
they're just having fun.
Yeah. And more and more programs are being written for it.
Yeah.
Because, let's face it, you know, the PC world, folks, when you go to the stores now, you don't see the big desktops and all that around anymore.
Yeah.
You've got to order online. Matter of fact, Ray was asking me, can you get a laptop built? And I go, no.
No.
And good luck getting anything right now. The chip manufacturers have delayed anything, right from automobiles down to any of the electronics in your phones and everything else, because chips are in a huge demand.
Very back ordered all over the
car
East.
Dealers are sitting there on tons of inventory that they can't do anything because they're still waiting for the modules to come in to hook up their vehicles.
The irony is that Pontiac Stadium in Michigan is full of Fords.
Yes,
that
they're
waiting for parts.
Yeah. You can find that online. It's a bunch of cars that they simply can't get the chips for. They're ready to go. They're ready to send out the door. The new F-150 Lightning.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of them that they can't send out the door at this point.
Yeah. I mean, and it's any types of electronics, whether, you know, say camcorders or, you know, anything electronic that needs a chip. Forget it. They'll tell you, you know, probably September, October, in time for Christmas.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's just the way it is right now, and that's the way it's going to be for a while until they can ramp up and get back at it.
I've been watching some stuff online, and, you know, next shipment, May. Well, okay, we're in May, and then it changes. Next shipment, June.
Yeah.
I saw one today that said next shipment was July, apparently because, you know, June is on Tuesday, so.
Yeah, right.
And they're gone for the long weekend, so.
Well, right. I was looking at this thing, an amplifier, and to order that because they're all transistors now,
right?
And chips, and the earliest you can get one of those right now is October. They're that far back ordered.
Yep.
And it's like, yeah, that's the way it's going to go, folks.
The Raspberry Pi 400s, keyboard, mouse, cable, everything you need except the screen, $100 and in stock.
There you go.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. Give us a call, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. And we will see you in just a couple of minutes on Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And you can call us at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free, 1-800-790-0415. You can listen to us live here on the air. You can listen to us on the live stream. You can listen to us through the Jazz 90.1 app. You can watch the live stream on YouTube. You can watch the live stream on Facebook.
We're all over the place.
Probably you can just open your front door and We're right there waiting to
Shazam.
Just get the coffee on. Almost exactly a month ago, researchers revealed a notorious malware family was exploiting a never-before-seen vulnerability that let it bypass Mac OS security defenses and run unimpeded. Now, some of the same researchers say another malware can sneak onto Mac OS systems thanks to another vulnerability. JamF is the name of the company, says it found evidence that the XCSSet malware was exploiting a vulnerability that allowed it access to parts of Mac OS that require permission, such as accessing the microphone, webcam, or recording the screen without ever getting consent. XCSSet was first discovered by Trend Micro in 2020, targeting Apple developers, specifically their Xcode projects that they use to code and build apps. By infecting these app development projects, developers unwittingly distributed the malware to their users in what Trend Micro researchers described as supply chain-like attacks. The malware is under continued development, with more recent variants also targeting Macs running the newer M1 chip. Once the malware is running on a victim's computer, it uses 2 zero days, one to steal cookies from the Safari browser to get access to a victim's online account, and another to quietly install a development version of Safari, allowing the attackers to modify and snoop on virtually any website. But JamF says the malware was exploiting a previously undiscovered third zero day in order to secretly take screenshots of the victim's screen. macOS is supposed to ask the user for permission before it allows any app, malicious or otherwise, to record the screen, access the microphone or webcam, or open the user's storage. But the malware bypassed that permissions prompt by sneaking in under the radar by injecting malicious code into legitimate apps. The malware searches for other apps on the victim's computer that are frequently granted screen sharing permissions, like Zoom, WhatsApp, or Slack, and injects malicious screen recording code into those apps. This allows the malicious code to piggyback the legitimate app and inherit its permissions across Mac OS. Then the malware signs the new app bundle with a new certificate to avoid getting flagged by Mac OS's built-in security defenses. The researchers said that the malware used the permissions prompt bypass specifically for the purpose of taking screenshots of the user's desktop, but warned that it was not limited to screen recording. In other words, the bug could have been used to access the victim's microphone, webcam, capture their keystrokes for things like passwords or credit cards. It's not clear how many Macs the malware was able to infect with this technique, but Apple confirmed that it fixed the bug in Mac OS 11.4, which was made available as an update. Are you up to date with your Mac OS? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
I mean, they didn't take 8 months to patch it like Windows does?
Yeah.
And then it breaks it again?
And then breaks every something else. So this was a very bad thing. But Apple fixed it pretty quickly and got out an update for it.
Gee, what a concept.
So if you are not up to date, if you are not running the latest version of Mac OS, Steve checking his machine right now, to make sure that you're up to date, get up to date. You need because this is serious.
Mm-hmm.
It's recording kind of everything. Again, you might think, well, I'm not important. Computers don't care.
Hey, yeah.
All of this stuff is automated. They will take anybody they can get and any information they can get from those people.
They can use you as a level of anonymity to attack somebody for real.
Yeah, they right. use your IDs to go attack other folks.
And then you have to prove it wasn't you.
And use it, you know, say, off your friends list and everything else,
right.
which, you know, your friends might not be as tech savvy as you are, and they fall prey to it.
Right.
Well, I got to say, you threw me off when you said JamF, because we've always just pronounced it JAMF.
Have you?
Yeah.
Okay. JAMF.
They're very.
Is that like BAMF?
Apparently.
Okay.
They're a very popular mobile device management software solution, so that a company can push their own software to all of their users.
Yeah.
And so if something malicious gets in your push, then all of your users get it.
If something malicious gets in your push. Words of wisdom.
Hey.
It probably is pronounced JAMF because it was a lowercase f.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Tom from Brighton, New York. Hiya, Tom. What's up?
Hi. Yeah, good afternoon. So I've got two systems, actually, that we're going to be upgrading. My son uses a MacBook Air, but it must be over 5 years old by now. And he's been complaining about it, some things that it's not capable of. And then on the other hand, I've been running Windows systems for many years. I got a laptop, which is also quite old. It's a ThinkPad, and it's like close to 10 years old, so you know that it's pretty slow. And I want to upgrade both systems. So with respect to the Mac, I'm wondering whether I should get him the MacBook Pro or a MacBook Air.
You might want to get the phone.
Yeah.
Sorry. So the MacBook Air is a little bit lighter and a little bit cheaper. The MacBook Pro.
Please turn your radio down.
My radio is not on.
So that, oh, interesting. We're getting that echo from somewhere else.
Somewhere else.
Yeah.
Is it you?
Was your phone ringing, or was that somebody else?
I had a phone ringing. Okay. I turned it off.
All right. Doesn't matter. Go ahead.
Yeah. So and so the both MacBook Air and MacBook Pro use the same chip. New Apple M1. The MacBook Pro has a fan, so it has better thermal cooling efficiency in it, so the chip can run faster, doesn't have to slow down when it gets too hot. So the MacBook Pro runs a little faster. So it depends if they're going to be doing, you know, 3D modeling or CAD work or, you know, extensive video editing. The Pro would be better for that because it's has that extra fan for extra cooling, where the for most basic stuff the Air is fine.
Right. He doesn't do hardcore developing, as I would call it. He does more video, and even the video isn't that strenuous, I don't think.
Yeah. If he's into gaming too, that would also point you to the higher end.
Right, he wouldn't be doing gaming either. It's, you know, a utilitarian application.
Yeah, the Air is probably fine.
Right, and it's also a bit cheaper, isn't it?
Yeah.
A little bit, yeah.
The other main difference is that the MacBook Pro has the Touch Bar, which was kind of the alternative to an entire touch screen, which would be more expensive. I have a Touch Bar. I use it now and then, but it didn't take off like Apple expected it to. In fact, one of the biggest things I use it for is to have a Cylon thing going back and forth.
Yeah, pretty much just it's eye candy.
Yeah.
And you can get it with a SSD and upgraded memory, too. Okay, both the Air now, the MacBook Air.
Well, with both of them, you can order it with greater configs, up to 16 gigs of RAM and I think one or maybe a 2-terabyte drive. You cannot upgrade it later. So, because it's all built into one chip.
Yeah, I've heard about that. That's okay. It looks like the Air is probably the best way to go for him.
Yeah.
Okay. Now let's go to my issues. I have a desktop system, but on the side I have this old ThinkPad, and it's getting too slow to use anymore. I'm thinking of replacing it with a. Sorry, my mind is slipping here. Not another PC, but a
Chromebook.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah.
Chromebook. So, what I like about the ThinkPad, I like the feel of it. It's got a great keyboard. It's a very solid piece of equipment. Are the Chromebooks do the keyboards feel anywhere close to what a ThinkPad might feel like?
Well, there's a lot of different Chromebooks from many different manufacturers. It's hard to say. There's cheap ones and there's good ones.
Yeah. Are the good ones? I know that Nick has used Chromebooks.
Yes. Right? I have not used the Lenovo Chromebook. Of course, Lenovo makes ThinkPads now.
Right.
I have not used the Lenovo Chromebooks, but they look an awful lot like the old ThinkPads.
Oh, they do. Okay.
Yeah, so if you go to lenovo.com/us/en/Chromebook, you'll be able to see them there. And again, I have not used them, but boy, they look good. They look a lot like it.
Okay. I suspect you're a little pricier than your average Chromebook, but that's okay. I can spring for that. Are the backup systems similar for Chromebooks as they are for Windows machines?
No. The idea behind a Chromebook is that you do most of your stuff up on the web.
So everything is on the web, and there's no need to do backup like using iDrive or
right.
other types.
Yeah, all your documents are already on Google Drive.
Right, you're using right. Google's workspace, I think they call it this week. So it's their word processor and spreadsheet and all that stuff.
If you want, you can hook up an external hard drive to back it up to another spot just to have that assurance that you've got another place that the files are backed up to.
So if your phone somewhere's been cut off from the internet for some length of time, whatever the reason, you now have a local backup that
you got it. Yeah.
One of the things that you can do in Google Drive is set it to say, I want everything I do on the web to be backed up on my machine. So I have done that. So when I, and I've told this story before, I was in a local coffee shop writing my last book. And I happened to look up at one point, and everybody was complaining because the coffee shop had lost internet access. And I didn't even notice it. I kept working. It was fine. When I got home, I opened up my Chromebook, and it uploaded everything I had written back to the to Google Workspace so that it was all there for me and duplicated on my machine. So for example, if I went to the beach, which I haven't done in a year and a half, if I went to the beach I had no internet access, I could still write.
Yeah.
As long as I made sure that I had opened the file before I left the house, it would copy it down and I'd be there. In terms of being able to do pretty much anything you want, again, if you are a very high-end user of spreadsheets or documents, like you're a lawyer or you're a CPA or that sort of fare, then a Chromebook may not be the thing for you. But for 90% of the people out in the world, a Chromebook is more than enough for them. It's the automatic backup. It's the automatic updating. It's the complete lack of viruses. So you get all of that stuff pretty cleanly on a Chromebook. And, of course, you can, before you go out and buy one, you can test that right on your desktop. You can open up the Google Drive and you can just log in with your
Google account.
If you don't have a Gmail account, make one. They're free. And then you can do word processing and spreadsheeting and see how it all works for you.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. Yeah, you've been both very helpful on both scores, the Mac and the
right. Thank you.
The Chromebook. So I guess what we have to do now is write the checks.
That's exactly it.
There you go.
All right. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye. All right. That was an interesting feedback loop thing. I don't know what that was.
See what happens with the next phone call.
Yeah, exactly. So those of you looking at Chromebooks, there are plenty of them out there. They start at like $150, but
you don't want that one.
You don't really want that one. But Lenovo,
unless you're that person that only looks at text web pages,
right?
Well, for kids to do their homework and that type of stuff.
Well, not anymore. Kids are doing some pretty sophisticated presentations now for their homework.
Right.
Of course, with Google Slides now in the cloud, you probably can still do that even on the on the entry levels. Yeah.
You can get it for that Lenovo, you can get $250, $280 Chromebooks pretty easy. 11-inch screens or 12-inch screens or whatever, 14-inch screens, whatever you want. And you can match and obviously Lenovo is not the only company that makes them. Asus, everybody makes a Chromebook these days. So you can easily find the device that makes you happy. Again, it used to be you could walk into any computer store in the country, play around with a half a dozen different keyboards and see which one you
touch,
like the best.
Yeah, get the feel and layout.
Not so much anymore, I'm afraid. Nowadays it's...
Well,
if you find somebody who's got one and play with it for 15 minutes, that's helpful. But beyond that, it's pretty much, it's a crapshoot.
Yeah, I mean, you might want to go to like a Staples or something like that. They might have a few more than, I mean, or even some local shops.
Staples, computer. Best Buy, any of the big box stores.
Yeah, might have some that you can test out and get the touch and feel
Walmart
of laptops, because that's about all they have is either laptops or tablets.
Right.
That's about it. I mean, like I said, you're hard-pressed to find any of these companies carrying big desktops like they used to. And that's why which we've been touting, and I know folks might get tired of hearing it, is about these Raspberry Pis, is because the chip manufacturers have more or less stalled. Yeah. You don't hear anything, you know, new and innovating coming out as far as the PC or Mac world. I mean, I can remember, Steve, it seemed like every other month or every month there was this new model versus that new model versus this. And them right along with the PCs now have fizzled right on out.
Pretty much all you get now is we made it a little faster. We added a little more RAM. We made the screen a little nicer.
And most companies only update once, maybe twice a year. They don't update every other month, which was annoying when you were like outfitting a business and, you know, we got 10 computers and now next month we want 10 of the same computers for this other office. They don't make that computer anymore.
Yeah. It's really gone all cloud-based. And, you know, a Chromebook or basically we're going backwards to the old days when all you had was a dumb terminal. You turned it on and it connected up to your host server. We're going back to those days. The only difference is now you got a colored screen.
Right.
And you can load a few programs. But other than that, you know, it's like, no.
And we've been saying, you know, Microsoft keeps telling their investors, we're gonna go to that. We're gonna have all of Windows in the cloud, and people will just essentially have dumb terminals.
What's biting them in the butt right now, though, are Chromebooks.
Yeah,
because I mean that's, you know, a leap way ahead of them. And again, as we tell, they don't get viruses, they don't get spyware, they don't get malware. You're not paying for updates that break your machine or brick your machine. Oh, you know, something tries to get in there, like happened here. Somebody tried to hack into your Chromebook. It's like, oh, really? My Windows machine is broken? I don't think so. Turn it off, turn it on, back to normal.
Back to normal.
It protects itself.
And the other thing is, every once in a while, somebody says to me, well, I can't run some big program, Adobe Illustrator. So I can't have a Chromebook. Okay, that's absolutely true. If you're doing one of those big Mac programs, Final Cut Pro, you're not going to buy a Mac Mini. Not if you're a professional. You're just not going to do it.
You
it's
buy
not
for your
you.
Needs.
Right. And they'll say, well, I can buy a $250 Windows machine. Why would I spend $250 for a Chromebook? Well, you're probably not going to run any of those big programs on a $250 Windows
machine.
Well,
it's like I've said before, it's not, you know, you got to buy it for your needs, not your dreams.
Exactly.
You can dream that, oh, I'd love to have, you know, this big video card and bucket loads of memory on it and a 6 terabyte hard drive in it, and this thing will, you know, light the world on fire. And I only run the internet on it.
Yeah, right. And mail, don't forget email.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's part of the internet.
Well, right. We've had customers that like that. So similar to the previous, you know, caller, which computer should I get? Well, what are you going to do with it? Well, I'm just going to look at web pages and maybe write some emails. Okay, you know, this, you know, $500 computer is fine. Then they come back and complain that their first-person shooter doesn't work right.
Right.
Well, you didn't tell us you were going to run that.
Yeah. Again, it's on your needs and what you want to actually do with it.
The web page they were looking at was Steam and playing 3D games.
Right, right. But that's. But again, that's the thing. If you, oops, I moved this.
Well, that was always my question to any of my customers. Right. They come in and say, all right, I want you to build me a computer. My first question is, what are you going to do with it? What do you mean? Tell me exactly how it's going to be used and what programs you're going to run and everything else.
Right.
Then I can assess, because I'm not going to sit there and build you a Cadillac when all you need is a mid-sized car.
Well, that's the thing. Look at it in terms of cars. I need a new car. What are you going to do with it? Well, I'm going to drive to the grocery store. Okay, you need a Porsche.
Yeah.
No, I don't. No, I do not.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, so you buy for what you're going to do.
Exactly.
I am going to drive to the store once a week. Okay, I can sell you this electric car that gets 28 miles to a charge. Oh, and twice a year I drive to Carolinas to visit my grandchildren.
Yeah.
Okay. Now you need a different car.
Mm-hmm.
Or for that week you rent another car.
Or you rent another car in that case, right? But you see what I'm saying is you buy for what you need. Don't don't pretend that if you don't tell us, we're going to give you something that runs everything. So yes, for example, in the case of Tom, is that Windows laptop enough for him? Rather, would a Chromebook be enough for him? If all he really does is some word processing, some spreadsheet that isn't, he's not a CPA, he's not running a company,
right?
And email and stuff like that, a Chromebook will more than do the job.
Or like Steve said, third game shooters and all this other
right. I've written books on a Chromebook, you know, so it will do the word processing you need done. I have run a small company on a Chromebook. Yeah, it will do the math I need done. You know, and I can do my email and I can write Python code and I can, you know, there's all kinds of things that I can do on it, but I'm never going to run Final Cut Pro and I'm never going to run that $600 third person shooter game. I don't even know if you can
Fortnite.
Buy it. Right, any one of those. I'm just not going to be able to do that on this. And so I have realistic expectations of my Chromebook, and it does everything I need it to do every time I need it to do it. But again, it's because I have the right expectations. All right, that music tells us we are done for the first hour, but do not go away because there is an entire another hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe coming your way. That's right. A whole nother hour of sound bites. And you can give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. If you didn't write that down, you can find them listed on our website at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. Take your time because we're taking a slightly longer break, but we will be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites. This is member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites. And we have Gordon from Geneseo, New York on the line. Hiya, Gordon. What's up?
Hey, how you doing? I was listening to what you were talking about, the Chromebooks. Actually, I should say that I don't use computers very much. They confuse me a lot. I don't really like them. And just wanted to put that in. I'm not really into these things much. So anyway, you mentioned about Chromebooks not getting viruses somewhere in that last segment. Can you elaborate on that? I was surprised to hear that.
Sure. As of this point, there are no viruses that can hold on a Chromebook. So even if you got one, there aren't any, but if you did get one, you just reboot and it's gone. The reason is that unlike every other operating system on the planet, the way Chromebooks work is the operating system. There are two versions of the operating system in memory. One is locked. And the minute you start the computer, it checks the two of them against each other. If they don't match, it throws away the unlocked one and downloads a clean version over the internet from a secret Google location. And so if you even could get a virus, it wouldn't be able to stay in the machine.
Wow.
Yeah.
What?
So just one quick question. As I say, I'm not really into these things. So Chromebook is a PC-type thing, not a Mac-type thing, right? Correct?
It's neither.
It's a personal computer, so it's a lowercase PC.
Right. Right. The basic idea is that there are the operating system from Apple, called Mac OS, runs on Macintoshes. The PC operating system, called Windows, runs on PCs. And the Chrome operating system, called Chrome OS, runs on Chromebooks. And Chrome OS is much closer to Linux than it is to Windows or the Mac. But you don't see any of that. All you see is the front end, where basically...
GUI.
Yeah, the graphical user interface. But the way it works basically is you're mostly running in a web browser. So you can do all your word processing and spreadsheets and presentation, you know, slide decks or PowerPoint type slides all on the web and run them just the way you normally would, only you don't have to have them on your computer. They're up on the web. And because they're in Google's cloud, it's also quite well protected. That's not to say you couldn't download something semi-malicious because there are, for example, programs that will run in the browser. And if you download one of those, essentially on purpose, it will run because you've told it it could run. So, for example, I had a guy very angry that he'd gotten a virus on his Chromebook. I said, okay, what? Let me look at it. And it wasn't a virus. He had loaded a toolbar, one of those things that you can add to a browser. But that toolbar was malicious. And it added it in the background. It changed where he did his searches. It did all kinds of things. But he had actively installed that because somebody told him it was great. Mm-hmm. But in terms of, oh, you've got a virus, doesn't happen.
What does happen is you get fake messages claiming you have a virus,
right,
and call this phone number to clean you out. So they're still going to try to trick you. But all those messages are lying. In fact, pretty much on any computer, those messages are lying.
Yeah, right. As we've told people for over the years, you know, they sit there, well, I got the screen sets to do it. And we tell them, all right, go over, unplug it, count to 10, plug it back in and start it up. Gone.
And as Dave alluded to in the last call, I got one of those on this screen. I'm running a Chromebook right now, and on the air, I got a pop-up message when I went to a website to check something for somebody. I got a pop-up message that said, your Windows machine is infected. Call this number immediately. Well, A, I'm not running Windows. B, Chromebooks don't get viruses. And so I just, in this case, I closed the window because it was closable. Some, you cannot close the window, so you just reboot and it's gone.
Yeah.
And you know the virus writers are lazy because they didn't take the 10 extra seconds to check the user agent,
right,
that your browser tells it. So they can put up the actual browser and the icon for the browser you're running in that fake message, but they didn't bother.
They don't bother, right. Mm. So, yes, there is the possibility that in the future someone will write a virus that works on a Chrome.
But they got to get past the locked kernel.
But there's a lot, yeah. And there is a contest held every year called Pwn to Own. And they give out hundreds of thousands of dollars in prizes and very high-end machines to anybody who can break into a machine. Every year, the Macs fall, the Windows machines fall, the Linux machines fall. Chromebooks have never fallen.
There have been problems found in Chrome OS that get fixed pretty quickly.
Right.
Yeah. But it's after you reboot the computer, they're gone. Because in essence, the Chromebooks will reload the OS every time it boots
from
a known clean source.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. So let me ask you this. This is sort of another question I was wanted to call you about a long time. So we have a PC, and then we weren't crazy about that, so we got a Mac thinking, oh, this is going to be better. And as I said, we're not really into computers very much. So we're sort of feeling kind of like, oh, God, we've got these two things. We use them both, but I don't think we probably take care of them properly as far as virus protection and all that kind of thing. So what it sounds like, is a Chromebook better than those as far as people who are lazy about taking care of all their viruses? And
yes.
It's not part of our life, you know?
Yeah.
Yes, well, exactly. Yes. Yes.
And a little bit to that point, the incidence of new viruses are on the downtrend because making fake virus warnings is much, much easier.
And much more lucrative.
Yeah, if you can trick someone into paying for a service that doesn't exist, that's a lot easier than writing a program and trying to make to get right. get it that way.
But yes, the to answer your question directly, you have a lot less maintenance
mm-hmm.
on a Chromebook. One thing about a Chromebook is they will upgrade in the background. So if you normally you have to say, oh, I've got an update me, and then you wait forever while it downloads and installs. And a Chromebook, what happens is every time you turn it on, it goes to look and see if there's an update. If there is, it downloads it in the background. When it's done, you get a little message. It says, there's a new update. Reboot your machine. And if you do, it takes normally Chromebook updates in about boots up in about 8 seconds. When you do an upgrade, it takes a little longer because it's doing all that stuff in the background, checking and blah, blah, blah. But it doesn't take that much longer. Right. Or you can completely ignore it. And then when you shut down your machine and put it away, fine. The next time you open it up, the first thing it's going to do is upgrade.
Yep.
So again, instead of taking 8 seconds, it takes 15 seconds. But then you're in with a brand new operating system. It's all good.
It'd be very similar to what an iPad or an Android tablet is like. It's much, much harder to get a virus on the tablet devices because they are built inherently harder to break into.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I didn't know that either. That's
well, the thing of it is, too, is most writers are going for quantity. And there are more PCs and more Macs out there for them to attack and grab information, and they're easy to crack. Whereas, like Nick was saying, the Chromebooks, that's a hard nut to crack, and nobody's been able to do it yet.
Now, we're not guaranteeing that it can't be done.
Yeah, never say never. Yeah.
Never say never, but at this point, they are...
You always have to say that with computers.
Right. But as of this moment, as far as we know... because the last moment was a moment ago, and now it's a new moment. As far as we know, there are no viruses that can infect a Chromebook.
Well, great. That's wonderful information. I really appreciate you guys filling me in on that.
Now, as I said to Tom, one of the things that you can do is get yourself a Google address, a Gmail address.
Yep.
Log on to Google Drive, drive.google.com. And you can then test out the word processing and the spreadsheet because, like I said, basically Chrome OS is the Chrome browser. So everything you do, you're doing in the browser. So you can test it right at home on the machines you currently have. Now, obviously on that 10-year-old Windows machine, it's going to be a lot slower.
Yeah, because I haven't written all my documents, my spreadsheets, and even a couple presentations. I've switched over to Google, and it automatically saves it up there, and it doesn't matter whether I'm at home or at work. I can log into my Google account and get a document or anything else or photos, and, it's there.
Yep.
Yeah, that does sound great because we have three places we bounce around.
So. Yep.
All you need is an internet connection. You log into your Google account. You could do it off your phone to show photos.
This is the other thing. If you bounce around through three places throughout the year, you know that there have been times you've left something important on the other machine.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen when it's all in the web.
And you also mentioned that you can take your Google Chromebook to, like, a cafe. The internet went out, but it was still working. So one of our places does not have internet. So that might also work. Is that correct?
Well, you can't do web browsing or anything. But in this particular case, I was writing a book. And what happened was it said, oh, I've lost the internet. Okay, I'll just save everything locally. And when the internet comes back, I'll upload it again. And it did all that in the background. So there's no magic. It's not going to let you browse or do any of that stuff when there's no internet.
Although there are Chromebooks and like other laptops that have cellular internet built in, so you can get onto the internet from cellular.
Yeah, you could tether it to your phone.
Or tether it to your phone, right. Yeah. But you pay extra for that cell service.
Right.
Sure. If you have an unlimited plan, like you say, you can tether it to your phone, and then it doesn't matter if they've got internet or not. You can sit there and go to that.
Right. It's going to be slower, obviously, than a fast internet connection.
Right.
But particularly if what you're doing is writing. Until you get 5G. Until you get 5G.
And then 6G.
And then 7G.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you get the idea. You can do pretty much everything you would do on a – everything the average user would do, you can do on a Chromebook.
That's great. I didn't even know really about them. I've just heard the words over and over and never really knew what you just told me. So thank you very much. That's great information.
There you go.
That's what we're here for.
Have fun, Gordon.
Well, thanks very much, you guys. Take care.
Thank you.
Have fun.
Thanks. And there's a lot of things you wouldn't even think you could do on Chromebooks and tablets and things. You know, I right now I'm doing a multi-camera video broadcast from my iPad.
Yeah, exactly. You can do those things. I have done video chatting on my Chromebook. Mm-hmm. This particular one doesn't have a great camera because when I bought it, I wasn't thinking about that. And
not many laptops do because the screens are so thin. They've taken Apple's idea. Let's make it as thin as we can. Well, then the screen isn't thick enough to have a good sensor.
But I'm seeing the other people very, very clearly,
mm-hmm.
and they see me a little bit broken up because it's a cheap camera. Okay. Like I said, that wasn't the main concern when I bought the thing.
You're not producing a high-quality movie here.
That's right. But it works. It works just like it does on my desktop, just like it does on my laptop. So it works just fine. That's mm-hmm. the kind of thing that you can do. In fact, many, many school districts have given their students Chromebooks, and they're teaching distance learning,
mm-hmm.
right, using video chat. Things that you know, the Brady Bunch or Hollywood Squares stuff, doing it that way, 40, 50 kids in a thing. All right, before we go back to the phones, let me remind people of two things. First, as you know, every Sunday night we do the Soundbites Lounge. That's at 9:00. If you go to soundbites.org/lounge, you will be able to join us from 9 to 10. And we'll talk about whatever people want to talk about. Those of you who have bookmarked the address, that address is no longer any good. The folks at Mastermind Lounge upgraded the system, and so it's on a new server, so it's got a new address.
It's kind of a random string anyway.
But if you bookmarked that string, it's no longer good. You'll get a 404 error. So now you have to go to soundbites.org/lounge to get the new thing. And also now, before we go back to the phones, let us remind everyone to take a few moments this weekend to send good vibes, say a prayer, think carefully about all the people who gave their lives for our freedom, because that is Memorial Day. And so remember all of them and what they have done for us. And now back to the phones. Our next caller is Paul from Rochester, from Buffalo, New York. Hi, Paul, what's up? Paul, you there? Paul? Paul? Calling Paul. Calling Paul. Hello, Paul?
Yeah, we'll try again.
Paul's not there.
Hang on, Paul. We're trying again.
Paul's not here, man.
Working through the phone system that wasn't designed for live calls on the radio here.
Yeah, exactly. We're doing it. Dave is linking you in now. It's very high tech. Are you there, Paul? Hello, Paul.
I just had a second kernel panic. I'm going to have to run some diagnostics on my computer here.
Your desktop?
Yeah.
Your laptop, I mean?
Yeah.
Interesting. And we have no Paul. We have no Paul. Paul, I'm sorry. I don't know what happened here.
Oh, that's what it is. The way the cables are going under the shield, it keeps sliding in and out of the socket.
Ah.
And it doesn't like me connecting and reconnecting everything in a row.
Maybe you need to put the little box on the inside.
Yeah, I might have to.
Yeah. We're trying Paul again. Paul? We're not getting Paul. Why are we not getting Paul? Don't give up on us, Paul. We're working on it. Dave's clearly never seen the board before.
No, it's not disconnecting.
It's not disconnecting from the old call. Ah.
There's the old call.
Remember the echo and everything?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's something wrong because this icon should change.
Should you turn it off and turn it back on?
Turn it off and turn it back on again. That's how it works.
Probably that'll fix it. Which is what Dave's going to go around to do.
Dave's going around back to turn it off and on again. That's exactly what he's doing. I'm going to get my water bottle out of the way. Even though the cap is on. The cap is on. The cap is about to be on. Cap is on. So we're working hard to get Paul from Buffalo, who I hope is not giving up on us. He's working on it back here. Dave's climbing all over. He's a little monkey. He's climbing all over. Here we go. Do you want me to get out of your way? Look at him. You're not seeing this, ladies and gentlemen, but we're getting this whole...
What a time for the cameras to crash.
Yeah, exactly. It's too bad. We've got Dave climbing all over everything, leaping, jumping. It's like a kung fu movie back here. Dave Lee, Bruce Enright. I don't know how to how best to put that, but he's working on it. He's seeing if he's gotten rid of the if he's hung up the old call yet. Aha! Aha!
We're still working on it.
He's still working on it. In the meantime, why don't I read a news item instead of going aha for 20 minutes. All right, Apple has begun shipping its 2021 M1-equipped iPad Pro tablets, and the larger 12.9-inch version has earned special acclaim for its beautiful mini LED display. But now some owners are reporting some distracting bloom effects appearing on the screen while viewing their tablets in a dark room. Man, these people are anally retentive. 2021 iPad Pro users have taken to Twitter to post images showcasing a slight bloom effect that can be seen around bright areas of the 12.9-inch iPad Pro screen when using it in total darkness. This is significant because Apple support documents for the new iPad Pro specifically spell out how the larger iPad Pro's Liquid Retina XDR display is designed to minimize bloom by handling local dimming better than typical LED LCD displays. Now, notice they say minimize, not remove. Local dimming is a trick used in newer LED LCD displays to try to match the high contrast ratio of OLED displays, which are capable of switching individual pixels on and off. LED LCD displays, by contrast, are backlit with LEDs that can't light specific pixels without casting some excess light. The 12.9-inch version of Apple's 2021 iPad Pro has a special mini LED display, and the addition of mini LED is a big deal because the Pro's mini LED diodes are a fifth the size of normal LED diodes, meaning more densely packed lighting zones that can be individually brightened or dimmed. These mini LEDs are grouped into an array of over 2,500 individually controlled local dimming zones. This delivers incredibly deep blacks right next to bright image areas, achieving a 1,000-to-1 contrast ratio, says Apple's support documentation. Transitional characteristics of local dimming zones, such as a slight blur or color change while scrolling against black backgrounds, are normal behavior. Some users are now posting images showing a noticeable light bloom around bright areas of the 12.6-inch iPad Pro screen in total darkness, even when they aren't scrolling. Many are quick to point out that this is a very subtle effect that's barely noticeable unless you're using an iPad in a dark room, but it is still a notable example of how Apple's new mini LED display falls short of what can be achieved with a high-quality OLED screen. You really need to be viewing HDR content on the device to see the difference the mini LED display makes. Not that it makes a non-HDR content look bad, of course. You should just know that not all iOS apps currently support HDR content, so you won't get the most out of your new 12.9-inch iPad Pro's display when using them. So do you expect perfection from your Apple devices, even when you're not promised that by Apple? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Hopefully, just like Paul did from Buffalo, New York. Are you there, Paul?
I am here.
Thank you for being so patient. Hold on.
Just so you know, Paul, we're going to probably be able to take your question on that, and then we've got to do a break in about a minute. But let's get to your question first.
Yeah.
I'm looking at cloud storage plans, and I just received one from PC Magazine about a Daegu premium mega backup plan. It's $129 for 100 years, and I was just wondering what your thoughts were on this.
All right. I'll tell you what. We will talk about this when we come back, because that's a longer answer than we have time for before the break. But there are quite a number of available storage plans out there in the world, and we will talk about a few of them when we come back. But in the meantime, we will take a short break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Paul from Buffalo, New York, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. Paul, stay on the line. Now that we've got you, we don't want to lose you. But we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here in the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you because it is your generous support that keeps us member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 32 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Paul from Buffalo, New York on the line. Paul, Daegu for 100 years worth of backup for $129. That's how much backups do you get?
15 terabytes.
15 terabytes.
That's a little data.
That's not bad. That's not bad at all. I don't know much about Daegu.
Virtually unlimited.
It's essentially unlimited. $129 for 10 years. Now, what does it come to after that? Of course,
100 years.
100 years.
100 years. I mean, 100 years.
It's a lifetime, according to them, a lifetime subscription.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Either your life or theirs.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how beatable that is. That's if it's actually 15 terabytes for 100 years for $129.
How are the reviews on it?
Yeah.
I don't have that right at hand. I was going to do that next.
Yeah, I would definitely check it out because there's so many scammers out there, too, promising you this and this, and then they take their money and then they're gone.
Right. Well, it's coming from PC Magazine.
Okay.
Yeah. That's where I received the
Okay. All right.
Okay, it does not seem to have a desktop application. So it looks like you have to do the backup yourself by hand.
They have mobile apps.
Yeah, but that doesn't help your desktop.
Yeah.
What's the one you're using, Nick?
I'll get to that in a minute. That's pCloud.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I use one called pCloud, which is $175 for 500 gig lifetime, one-time fee of $175. What I like about pCloud is that it has desktop apps. So I have it on my machine. I have it on my wife's machine. I have it on my daughter's machine. So it's a Windows machine, a Linux machine, and a Mac. And everything they do is automatically backed up to the cloud. They don't have to think about it. They don't have to worry about it. They don't have to do it by hand. And that's, generally speaking, in every backup option, having to do it by hand is where it breaks down because we're all human and we forget. I have a second place that I back stuff up to, and I've automated that as well. But back when I was doing it by hand, I would often simply forget to do it. And
skip
I was a systems administrator.
Yeah,
for
skip
Pete's
a week.
Sake.
Yeah, you get busy as life goes on and things.
Right. But so it, once it's automated, that's different. So be very careful if it is not automatable.
I understand.
Looks like they're based in Sweden.
Yeah, I don't know.
And but, use just Google as their back end.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's all right then. But if
the, I found an article on Google Cloud case studies. Here's one of our customers.
Oh, nice.
Degu has 9 million devices.
Wow.
And they're using our great Google Cloud storage.
Oh, there you go.
So a lot cheaper than Google Cloud.
Yeah, it is. So at any rate, that's the point. If you are looking for something automated, I would humbly suggest pCloud. And you can read about that at asknick.com/backup.php.
Got it.
And that will give you an idea of a number of different backup things, including a link to pCloud. If you get their lifetime subscription, you can get 5 terabytes or 500 gigabytes. Or 2 terabytes of storage. They offer a lifetime subscription. If you use my link, I get a couple of pennies. So far, I haven't. It hasn't really significantly increased my retirement in any way. But I do want to put that out there so that you're not scammed into sending me a nickel.
Does pCloud do phones also?
I have not used it for that.
But usually phones, you can just go to Google.
It's nice to have all your stuff in one place, but you kind of want to have multiple backups, too, in case that one place goes away.
Sure. Right. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks very much. You've been very helpful.
Yeah, thanks. Our pleasure. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Okay. Have a great day.
You too. I don't know if they do phones. I've not used them for phones.
They have an iOS device app, so I would assume they'd have an Android one, too.
Maybe I actually have it on my phone and just simply forgot about it. That's always a possibility with me. Here we go. I'm looking now. pCloud with a P. L-M-N-O-P. P.
Find their website and where the download link is.
Well, I don't have it on my device. If it is, I don't know. We talked about the Jitsi meeting, so I don't have to do that.
Oh, they even have an M1 native version for the new Macs.
There you go.
It's assuming I have a Mac. Let me scroll down to see the rest of the apps.
Yeah. All right. While he does that, let us go back to the phones. Our next caller is Will from Hampton, Virginia. Hi, Will. What's up?
Hey, Nick. How's it up there in sunny Greece, Rochester area?
Oh, it's a beautiful spring day here in Rochester, New York. It's about approximately 50 degrees and cloudy.
We're back to fall. We already had our summer.
Yeah, we had summer. We had a couple of days of summer. How are things? Do I want to know how it is in Hampton?
Yeah, it's actually, believe it or not, about the same, only a touch warmer, overcast, and maybe about 60-ish, I guess.
Okay, I won't hate you too much then. So what's up, Will?
Well, this kind of dovetails on the conversation about virtualized environments.
Yeah.
And it is actually a PSA that I'm putting out. I, like anybody else, I love free stuff, and normally I'm standing at the head of the line when it comes to free stuff. And I've just come across something that may be of interest to people who are considering CCNA as a certification.
Yeah.
There's a YouTube channel called Network Advisor, and the gentleman has a 4-minute video in which he discusses Cisco Packet Tracer. He said, I'll just give you a brief synopsis. The Cisco Packet Tracer is a free virtualized lab environment. You can create limitless combinations of network topologies without the need to spend huge amounts of money on hardware, not to mention the space you need to house it all.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice. So you can simulate the network without having to buy the network.
Exactly.
Very nice. Mm-hmm. And the name of that product again?
Well, the name of the YouTube channel is, well, the name of the product is Cisco Packet Tracer.
Good. So anybody who needs to that sort of stuff can get the package tracer, the Cisco package tracer, and be on your way. Excellent. And the YouTube channel is Network Advisor.
That's correct. Yes.
Got it. Will, that's excellent information. Thank you.
Of course. Just thought I'd kick it out there for I know that you have a lot of listeners out there from a wide variety of backgrounds, some of them considering going into IT, and so I just thought I'd kick that out there.
Perfect. Thanks, Will.
Have a blessed day.
You too. Keep smiling, too. And, yeah, we do have people across the range. So we're delighted when somebody calls them something like that. It does appear that pCloud has an Android app as well.
And Linux and browser extensions. So they've covered all the platforms.
They've covered it all. I will be downloading that, now. So that I can get, I can install it on my phone. Here we go. No. It's trying to install it right on my Chromebook, which would work. I could do that, but I don't. Mm-hmm. I don't need it there. So I'll install it when I get home. I don't need that anymore. So it's gone now. So definitely take a look. You should be using something to do backups. You already know that. We've told you that about 600 billion times. You should be doing something to use backups.
So even the laziest person who wants no maintenance at all, you should back up, at least have a backup drive, so then you don't have to pay thousands of dollars in recovery costs that may not be possible.
Right. Because it's only going to take that one time when something you've been working on is important to you, whether it's photos or anything else, and that system, your computer dies, and there it goes. And Steve and I both heard it over the years. I meant to back it up. Well, we meant to get it back for you, too, but we can't.
Right.
You didn't take... Evidently, it wasn't that important to you.
Not important enough to make a backup.
That you couldn't take the time to back it up. And like I said, especially now with Google, there is no excuse because it automatically puts it up there and it's there for you. And like I've said for, a long time now, it doesn't matter where you are. You could be visiting relatives out in California. Log in on their computer. You go into Google and log into your Google account. And there's any document. Say you wanted to show them a bunch of the photos, but, they were back at home. No, if they're on Google, you can go over there, select a bunch of them, and show them.
Same thing with pCloud.
Yeah.
I tell people all the time, look, you don't want to back up your documents. That's your business. But you only have one copy of the picture.
Mm-hmm.
And if that picture is somebody who's passed and you want to keep that memory, you better keep that memory.
Well, that's where I've been able to, because I've got one web page going on right now. Matter of fact, I messed it up somehow or another. It thinks it's a business. I was trying to create a web page just for our family because my dad's one of 19. And we've got quite an extensive family tree out there, so I created a page, and I've been posting other photos. Matter of fact, I found an old photo of my grandmother when she retired, and, that was a lost article. Nobody had it, but I still happen to have it, so I threw it up there. Because it was saved over, along with the family photo. There was one photo where my dad and... out of the 19 kids, I believe 17 were there for this. We used to get together for Thanksgiving. It was always a big thing. And on the main page is that one photo that exists still of all my aunts and uncles and my grandmother and grandfather. And, unfortunately, most of them have passed.
But you've got that memory.
Yeah.
And the thing I like about pCloud is that it's automated. Because we're all human and we don't back up often enough. Something like pCloud Whether you use pCloud or something else, whether you get it through my link or somewhere else is irrelevant to this discussion. The fact is that having something that automates backup.
Yeah.
So every time you put a document in the documents folder, a picture in the pictures folder, every time you take a picture on your phone, you know, whatever you do, it gets automatically backed up. In fact, I have my photos backed up on Google Drive, on Amazon, what do you call it? Amazon
Prime Storage.
The Amazon Prime Storage. I guess it's not
Prime, Prime everything.
Not a cool name, right? It's Amazon Prime Storage. And on pCloud. There would have to be, if there was a big enough disaster that all three of those systems went down, honestly, I wouldn't be thinking about, gee, do I have that picture? So I have all three of those. They are all automated, so I don't have to do thing one to back up any of those. And that means the backups are working.
Well, just last night, my wife got for her son, bought her a new Pixel phone because her other phone was like ancient. It was starting to do like my Pixel did and started to lose, you know, not holding the charge and everything else and acting up. So we had, a while ago, I had convinced her to put everything, you know, create a Google account, even though she was a Yahoo user. I said, no, seriously, put it, you know, create Google and we'll, you know, set everything up. So now when it came to hooking up, I hooked up her old phone with her new one, did the transfer. She goes, well, what about all my contacts and everything? I says, just wait. And it took a little while, but we moved everything. It moved all her apps. And because of Google, there came all her contacts on her phone, all her photos, which a long time ago I set that automatically goes up to Google Photos. I says, there you are. Wait a minute. They're there. Yeah. Even her background was there.
Right.
So to her, all it is now this lighter, you know, phone that works great and holds a charge.
And does everything her old phone did.
But, you know.
And better and faster.
Yeah. And all I had to do was hook up one cable to the other and say, yeah, transfer it. And because we signed it into the Google account, it says, all right, yeah. It moved everything. It took a little bit. But
the same thing when I bought this Chromebook. I opened it up. I logged in with my Google username and password. And no, don't do whatever it is you think you're doing.
You said the keyword.
I said the keyword. About 3 minutes later, I had all my apps, all my bookmarks, all my everything installed exactly the way it was before. All the icons across the bottom were in the right order. Everything. Because I had backed it all up, I had told the system, make sure that whatever I do on any one of my machines is backed up and mirrored on all my other machines. So all my machines work the same way. I have all the same passwords, all the same bookmarks, all the same icons, all everything on every Chromebook, on everything. So it's real. It makes it real convenient. You know, back the days when you had to know where your bookmark file was and move it to the new machine and get it in the right place and yada, yada,
moving all the emails. And
Those days are gone. You know, if you're using a web-based email program, you can save all your mail in the cloud, and then you don't have to worry about what machine it's on because it's on all your machines.
Got to make sure what your cloud quota is. We had a customer come in from a ISP in another part of the country. He only had 10 gigs of mail storage.
He only had 10 gigs of mail storage.
And he was getting mail over quota messages. So, and like most people, he thought that meant his computer hard drive was full.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, your mail storage is full because too many people sent you photos.
Oh, yeah. And you need to download the photos to somewhere that will back them up to a different place. And then you need to delete the ones that are there because you do only get 10 gig. And if you get, we had that at RIT.
And that's going to be a problem with Google now because Google Photos used to not count. Now all those photos you get in your email, they're going to count.
They're going to count. We used to also have that problem with our faculty. They would send whole books around. And the books would include pictures and, you know, as they're writing a book, they collaborate with people and they send it to the editor. And so they'd have 15 or 20 copies of that same book file. Yes. And they've written a dozen books and they never delete any of the old copies. Well, guess what? That takes up a lot of storage.
Mm-hmm. Back when storage was giant platters of disks that took a forklift to bring in and out.
Yep. Back, well, and our IT limited the amount of storage people could have. When I was running my own storage, I did not limit their storage.
Yeah,
I never told them that, but I didn't do it.
We used to run into that all the time in companies where they had like a 5 or 10 meg email limit, because that's a whole lot of email messages.
That's a lot of mail.
Except for the graphics department, where that was one photo.
Mm-hmm.
And we were constantly fighting with IT people saying the graphics department needs a much higher quota. Well, I can give them 20 megs. This one picture is 20 megs, and there's 50 of them on that brochure they're making.
Yeah. No, I get it. That's you got to be. But yes, Peak Cloud is available on Android TV, on M1 machines. It's available on Android. It's available everywhere, apparently. So it is available as through the browser. So if you did want to drag and drop files, you could do that as well.
That kind of shows you how committed the company is by making clients for that many platforms. They're in it for the long haul.
Yeah, they're not kidding.
And
they're not kidding
probably any new platform that pops up.
Right. So, well, they've already got one for M1.
Yep.
How long did that take them?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's one of the things I like about them.
They were, I was listening to a podcast the other day, and they were talking about the first M1-based Mac malware, and everyone was shocked how soon it came out. And one of the panelists was saying, Apple spent a good hour at the keynote last year telling developers how easy it is to port your code to the M1. You shouldn't be surprised.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. As we said a couple of times today, almost every operating system can get a virus, almost. And you need to be aware. You need to be careful. If you're not dancing the security tango, you should be. If you're not careful and discerning, you're going to end up with a virus.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the way the world works, and you got to live with that.
And maybe think about expanding your definition of malicious software.
Right.
It doesn't have to be a self-replicating virus in the traditional sense.
Yeah, granted,
it can be a fake message on a fake ad.
Well, that's the thing. And you were mentioning it before, Steve. Viruses aren't as prevalent. They're still out there, but the writers aren't writing viruses as much as they are malware and spyware.
And ransomware that targets governments and companies.
Right.
Because now there's a new industry in ransomware insurance.
Right.
That, for a few $100,000, you pay your insurance policy and they pay the $1 million ransom.
Right.
Right. But the thing that is, though, folks, is, granted, the spyware, it won't take your machine down, but it's in there searching out and stealing personal information.
Right.
Now, the thing that is like, say your email list, they can, these script kiddies can write a program that'll go into different machines and it steals all the email addresses. They turn around and gather those millions upon millions.
Billions now. There was a new 3 billion email address and password link that came out the other day.
And they're grabbing those, and what they do is they gather, and then they sell them to malicious companies. Tell you what, I can sell you 2 billion email addresses, and you pay me. Now, the script that they wrote that just goes out there and mines all these email addresses for them is now turning a profit. Whereas before viruses, all they do is, lock somebody's machine up. Whoopie-doo.
Well, and
they didn't
why,
make money off of that.
Right.
Now they're making money off of harvesting information from your computer.
And that's why we tell people, if you get an unsolicited email, do not answer it. Even if it's got an unsubscribe, do not answer it. Because what that means is you're somebody who actually reads emails and clicks on the links in them.
Yep.
Your address is now worth much more than the person who never does that.
Well, it's just like you said, too. How a lot of these folks on Facebook, they'll go there and ask, what's your Pixie name or all these other favorite things. Hello. Quite often, their clues that you use for passwords.
Your password recovery.
That's right.
And they use it against you.
I think I told a story before about two women that were chatting, and the one's son comes in. Hey, Mom, I'm doing a family tree project for school, and what's your mother's maiden name?
Yeah.
And then runs in the other room, comes back a few minutes later. Hey, Mom, what street did you grow up on? And Mom is all excited.
What was your first dog?
Mom's all excited about his son taking an interest in school and her friends. You know he's getting your security answers, don't you?
Yeah, exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to be careful of those things. Generally speaking, you don't really need to know your elf name. I mean, I'll give you an elf name. You want an elf name? I'll give it to you. Call me. Pay me $20.
Yeah.
It's cheaper than losing your identity to somebody. $20 for an elf name. Mm-hmm. There's an idea. There's a business model.
Yeah. But like I say, these script kiddies haven't gotten dumb and, you know, not doing viruses. They've gotten a lot smarter in creating stuff that they can steal information and then make money off of it.
Because
before, the viruses didn't yield them squat.
You're too late. YourElfName.com already exists.
Son of a pup! Son of a pup! How much does their elf name cost?
Looks like it's free. So, who knows what they're doing behind the code?
Yeah.
Oh, that's hysterical.
That's funny.
Cheese and crackers. I hate that.
Yeah, but it was a good idea. Well, it lasted all of 10 seconds.
Oh, Justin. I put in a fake name, and it says my elf name is Dazzler Sugar Gems.
I see that one. I did John Smith and came back with Tiny Treacle Magic.
Oh, very good.
There's a recently named button at the top. Smiggles Chatterfingers.
There you go. Dazzler Sugar Gems, Smiggles Chatterfingers.
Did you hear about the company that was trying to change malware virus names? Because no one can remember CVE numbers, so they created a Twitter account that randomly generated two-word names.
Nice.
Because, you know, things like all the names that were so popular. Because that's the first rule of naming your malware is coming up with a good name. But they used such a stupid dictionary that no one uses them for their virus names, but they liked it because it was stupid names.
It was a clever idea, at least. Yeah. I actually wrote a page once that generated 1,000 fake email addresses.
Really?
Yeah, just to see if anybody would hit. It's been hit hundreds of thousands of times.
Well, one of the things that the bad guys did in the early days is, you know, A@mail.com, B@mail.com, right. C@mail.com. Mm-hmm. And a computer can make a million email addresses instantly.
Yeah.
And with no more work on your part than feeding a code into it.
Matter of fact, they could do that within minutes.
Yeah. Right.
You know, in today's machines, it'd be actually billions.
Yeah. So every time, you know, you hit enter, you get a different set of fake email addresses. Yeah. I'm sure there's some real ones in there, but unlikely.
And they almost don't need to bother with that anymore with so many billions of leaked email accounts.
That's right. That's exactly right. Oh, well. Be careful. Be careful of what you click on, what you allow to have happen, all of that stuff. All right, that music tells us that you have wasted 2 hours of your life with this nonsense. It also tells me that we are done for another week. It tells Dave he can go home and take a nap. It tells Steve he can go fly something. Not a kite. Rockets this weekend, okay.
Head up to the airport to see the rocket show.
There you go. And we're done for another week. Remember our fallen veterans. This weekend, this is their weekend, those who gave that last full measure of devotion. But we are done for another week, and we would like to thank you all. Have a very safe and blessed Memorial Day weekend. We will be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours.